Reading comic books, pop stars, podcasts, listen to Bug and Douche. Spoiler alert, got my mind on my comics and my comics on my mind. Reading comic books, pop stars, podcasts, listen to Bug and Douche. Spoiler alert, got my mind on my comics and my comics on my mind.
Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch. Cumberbun. Hey, Bug.
Huh?
I'm recording.
Are you? All right.
It's the start of...
Ultron!
Podcast!
Spoiler alert.
Even cool news.
What other names do we have?
Pop-Tarts. Pop-Tarts go. Right.
That's good.
What's your name?
My name is Mark underscore L underscore Miller.
And what do we do here?
We do talking into microphones and reading and sometimes pissing people off.
Lots of times pissing people off. And who am I?
Who are you?
I was asking you. It was an IQ test.
I just said what my name was.
No, I asked you who I was. It's not always about fucking you.
Your name is Rob Patey.
Jesus Christ. Yes, I am Rob Patey, and if you haven't figured out, I'm hosting the train wreck this week. That is our podcast. Sorry, folks, Jadles has more important things to do, like other podcasts. I am firmly believing he's starting his seventh podcast right now rather than being with us. So no JD, and that's why it's an Ultron. What were you saying?
Probably.
Yeah, no, not probably. I'm sure most definitely.
Yes.
He hates us.
Mm-hmm.
You know who doesn't hate us, Bug?
Who?
The web.
Oh, did we get anything? From the web.
Shut right out, Charlie's asshole.
Well, did we?
Yeah, we did. We got comments from the web, actually, because I went out and I asked people if they wanted to talk to us tonight, despite the fact Jadles isn't here.
They probably did. And did they jump at that since JD wasn't here?
We actually got a ton of talky-backy requests from the web.
Straight from where?
Charlotte's asshole. Some pig. Nobody ever wants to wax poetic about Charlotte's Web after we do that, and that makes me so sad. That was one of the just seminal books of my childhood.
Did you know that a fair is a veritable smorgasbord? Remember that?
I do. Yeah, I remember. Some pig. All right, actually, one of the first questions we got from the web, Adam Bunch asked us, how do you feel about the shake-up at Image?
What happened at Image?
This was very lightweight fare. It was essentially the head of marketing and the head of sales quit within about 2 weeks of each other. And anybody who knows anything about business knows that the two are pretty much inexorably tied. So if one goes, usually the other one is very quick to follow. What do I think about it? I think they've got sales issues. So
yeah, that's the thing. Deal. Usually, yeah, I mean, I did look that up when someone asked about it. And I put that together that sales are down. Image is not as the big... I mean, for a while there, it was like, what are all the big books? And they're all from Image. And I think still there are a lot of them from Image. But, you know... Sales have probably plateaued instead of risen, and the blame has to fall somewhere.
Yeah.
Other than the people choosing the books that are being made by those places, like the 101st sci-fi book starring a woman in the future book, you know, that they put out.
Or anything in the future, let's be honest.
There are more in the future too, but yeah, I mean.
Bitch Planet in their repertoire.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, but I'm just saying, like, there's a, and I think we have one this week of a female-led sci-fi book that has just, like, you know, one or two interesting tweaks to it to make it different than the other 108 sci-fi books out there that everybody and their mother seems to be putting out these days.
There is a lot of sci-fi. That's not a bad thing, because sci-fi is awesome. As long as it is awesome, unlike Bitch Planet, which wasn't awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the only one I've really hated. I love me some female protagonists. I've loved them. I've loved it since Ridley and Alien. Sigourney Weaver kicked some major ass. Fucking A. Loved her. Just, you know, make them interesting. Unlike
Bitch Planet. You liked her so much you got her name wrong. It's Ripley.
I like Ridley's Believe It or Not, too.
It's Ridley Scott or what's her name? Ridley.
Ripley from... How much do you really think you just want to name her Ridley? And they just said, you know, Ridley Scott, don't be a dick.
Yeah. What is it? Ridley? Poe Ridley? No.
That's Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley?
Poe Ridley? What the fuck? All right, there's a second part to this question. So that's the shake-up at Image. Is essentially, if there are no more money to be made, sales and marketing exits the building real fucking fast and goes on to the next thing. So that's my guess.
When there's no more money to be made, the dead will walk the earth.
And the dead are in sales and marketing, essentially, shuffling off to the next feasting ground.
At the Image offices.
I'm in it. I am a self-loathing son of a bitch. I know what I am. All right. Now, this next one, it's a two-part that Adam Bunch asked us. And this second one's a motherfucker. And he knew what he was doing when he asked it, I think, going to this crew. and he knew JD wouldn't be here tonight either. So
here we go. Wait. I'm unscrewing the can of worms.
Yeah. Before we screw the pooch, unscrew the can of worms. What about the sexual harassment problem brought back to the forefront at DC?
What about that, douche? What do you think of that?
We're not going to name any names, but there was a certain departure of a beloved editor of a certain sub-brand that published many beloved Dark Side of DC titles for us over the years. This is the second departure from the coveted Vertigo brand. And this new departure, not the last one, but this new departure is under the shadow of some shenanigans. And the shenanigans being of the human resources verboten kind of slapsy assy between man and woman in the office.
Basically, once again, you know, there's a new outrage in comics. There's got to be an outrage every week.
In comic book reporting, let's be fair here. Okay, so I did a Google search. In comic book reporting, there is an outrage. So I think
there's got to be an outrage somewhere.
I think in the absence of any real news, because I think the books are rather tepid this week as they get ready for their rebirths and reshufflings and whatnots, that part of this is all of it's speculative, because nothing has come to actual trial or actual indictment. So it is all speculative,
But to a lot of people, once it's mentioned, that's the indictment right there, and there should be an immediate flaying of another person's career, salary, and everything else. Now, I understand that sexual harassment is not a good thing. I want to make sure people understand this. Sexual harassment is no good.
Good luck.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Should not be sexual harassment. At the same time... And there is allowed to be multiple things going on at the same time. I think that there are a lot of people that are just extremely oversensitive to topics, and with comic books being that rare kind of amalgamation between art and business at a more of a corporate entertainment kind of level, you get a lot of sensitive types. Mixed in with a lot of more cut and dry business types. And oftentimes those two types do not mix well, especially if you add alcohol at conventions and things like that. I'm not condoning it. I'm not giving excuses for it or anything like that. It's definitely not only alcohol and everything, but I do think that there was an incident a couple of years ago with another editor and another creator, two men at a bar that I was at San Diego Comic-Con, that the same thing sort of happened, and it caused a big controversy, and someone writes a letter to Bleeding Cool, and this and that happens, and you know, all of a sudden it's an indictment of the person. Do you believe that somebody should lose their job over this, or is it something that we can learn from, possibly get help for, and move on from it? That's what I'm wondering.
No, I mean, essentially, there's abuse of power on both sides, okay? There's both abuse of power from females and abuse of power from males. And I've seen it. I've been working for 20 years, large companies, okay? And I'm in marketing, so it's a little more loosey-goosey than the rest of the org, as well as we got a close tie to sales, and they're just like animals. There's a more visceral nature to the groups, okay? And I have seen exploitation on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody's absolved, okay? I think the merit of your work is what should be what promotes you and pushes you forward. It's for the benefit of you, and it's for the benefit of the company. If you rely on anything as transitory as your looks or your sparkling personality, you're really fucked in life.
And you're not contributing
a goddamn thing, to be honest, either. You're riding on the coattails of people actually doing work.
I was actually told last year that, you know, it's really your online presence, the amount of Twitter followers you have, the amount of followers on Facebook you have that a lot of people are looking at. So it kind of is a popularity contest.
If you're talking about comic book sales, okay, I'm talking, yeah, every facet, okay. Every job these days needs a social media component to it, okay? You have to be somewhat of a selfie prostitute, okay, if you're going to move forward in certain career paths. I'm not going to say it's for all. Okay, there are facets of marketing you could go into, data analytics, for instance, okay, that feed data, where you don't need to be a social media prostitute. Yeah. Other facets of it, if you're going to try and ride and control social media, you've got to pimp out a little bit to get followers. Likewise with comic books. It seems these days that I've heard on several occasions that your publishing, you're getting published, could be very well dependent upon how many social media followers you have, because then you've got a guaranteed sale when number one comes out.
I can understand that. And I don't want to like name names or point fingers or something like that, but I do think that there are those in the industry right now, given chances without proving themselves simply because of gender and race, which I don't think is a good thing either. And it's like there's a lot of things that happen because of that that isn't negative per se to specific groups. And I don't hear people like complaining about that. But if it's something like this, I think that there can be a fine line between like flirting with someone you're working with and crossing that line where you're harassing somebody.
The definition of sexual harassment is you are asked to stop. You must be asked to be stopped by that other individual.
Exactly.
Please stop doing that. And if you keep, and if that, those words are not said, all right, I'm sorry, this partially goes back to the whole salary debate as well. Yeah. Half the time I've found where women are not making comparable to men, it's because they haven't asked. And you
That's
can go
true.
Back to a
That's
lot of societal true. Things that say that women weren't empowered to ask, and I'm very sorry for that. I really am. I think it's fucking terrible. As you can tell, I grew up in a house of complete callousness where everybody was empowered. So,
and I grew up with a house of mainly a single mother, and basically I did not know enough to ask for a salary or to be able to barter for stuff like that. So I think, I'm not saying that I've been... that I'm not good at asking for salaries, but it's difficult for me. I think it's anyone. It's difficult for anyone when you're doing a interview and saying like, how much do you want to be? Do you want to make at this? That's a weird stance to take. You don't want to say too high because then you'll get laughed out of the office. You don't want to say too low because they're going to jump on it immediately, and then you end up like not feeling comfortable working there for the place.
I've never had a problem with this.
I always did. I always have a problem. I want them to. I always ask like what the last person made.
It's porcelain. Oh my god, that's a setup for failure. Way to go.
Is it? Why? Why?
Asking what the last person made. Who gives a fuck what the last person made?
I'm just saying, like, what is the... I mean, give me a general...
Are we doing career counseling? We're doing career counseling now.
Yeah, we are. This is back to the sexual harassment.
I'll be honest. I go in essentially 20% higher than my current. And I do that before I even walk in for the interview. We talk about that during the phone interview. So I go in 20% higher than my current, and that doesn't count bonuses and other options and things like that. But base, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, never mind. Anyway, all I'm saying, with the sexual harassment thing, I think that instead of, you know, let these people take care of that stuff themselves, and if it's not being taken care of, vote with your dollar. Don't sit there and just out people immediately and ruin a career. And don't pass judgment on somebody if you don't have all the facts.
And I'm going to go to the media on this one because I only found one or two sites that really glommed onto this, to be honest with you, when I searched it. And
I'm sure you know which sites those are.
Yeah, we don't need to mention them. They don't need the advertising. I'm sorry you guys are stuck in this kind of a drought where that's your fucking news, to be frank. So that's what I think of it. You know, that comics have gotten into a state. Because let's be honest, the new Vertigo didn't set the world on fire. Yeah. After Berger left, I actually thought the imagination level really went down again. I think Karen's hands were really fucking tied since the whole move to Los Angeles, to be frank.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that happened with a lot of people at DC because it's like, it doesn't take, you can't just have 2 months to get yourself acquisitioned to a new location completely and everything. It's like, that's ridiculous.
Well, they had a couple of years, though, to get melted in the corporate structure. As someone, what the fuck are you doing? Are you fucking an envelope? Bug.
I just blew my nose. I turned the microphone off because I put my, it didn't work. Put the Kleenex up to my nose. All right.
All right. But anyway,
the other thing that I wanted to say is that percentage-wise, it's just funny that comics are such a small business that people think it's like this huge business and everything like that. I go to these conventions. I see the same 100 or so people that I see 5 times a year. I see the same people. You see the same people acting up when they're drinking and they're out at the bars. Mm. You see the same group of people who are just like kind of there. It's such a small business that somebody like there's going to be a sexual harassment in there person in there, as well as someone who fucks sheep, as well as someone who I don't know, likes to kick sand in babies' faces on the beach. There's all those types in comics.
It'd be funny if there were only those three types in comics.
I think that there are these people that are talking about this because just because they have no real
news
standing. There's no news, but there's no real understanding of business and what sexual harassment also is and everything. I mean, I don't know exactly what this guy was accused of, but it's interesting to see, like you said, it's like you have to be able to say no, you have to do this, you have to audibly say, no, this is not what I want. And there's always, I think there's that time, I mean, look at this time between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or whatever. You're there at some moment where you're like either alone and with somebody or not.
We're going to go this deep into this. No, keep going.
I'm just saying, you, a guy, or a girl for that matter.
Sure.
Just take a leap to see if that person is interested in you. Now,
oh my God.
The thing is, what happens after that? It's like, does the person take the hint when the person says no, or is that person persistent?
Mm-hmm. Or you could just be
what happens.
You know what, kids? Just be a raging fucking dick like I am and repel human beings. That's your. You are so clearly a single guy. It's funny. It's just it's.
I'm just saying.
No, that, I'm good for you. I'm jealous.
That's a hard thing. When, I mean, anyone out there can agree that if just being a single person and like just trying to like form a relationship, that's such an iffy thing to let someone into your well controlled world.
I'm middle aged and obviously just fucking heinous because I mean it's just not even a thing that occurs in my world because I'm not single. So it just it's,
you know, well, you just ask yourself, you say, okay, well, if I do take this chance, it gets to the point where it's you either give up like trying to connect with other people or what? I don't know.
All right. Well, no, what I'm trying to say is that a woman has not visibly hit on me since the 90s is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you never know.
No, I do know. I'm not that autistic.
You are told by numerous people that you're a handsome man.
By dudes. By exactly. Dudes that listen to this podcast. Oh, I get hit on by guys constantly.
Well, dudes like you.
That's not good. In the office. All the guys I work with are hetero. Not that I would deny any homosexuals, just none have applied.
Some would like to,
please do.
I'm not saying that like a first move is to grab someone between the legs and bite their ear.
No.
It's usually not
assault.
Try on someone.
That's assault.
That's kind of assault, and that's what was accused on one of these things.
Was it assault or was it sexual aggravation? There's a difference.
Then again, if I'm like when I'm like with like my friends that I grew up with, like all and like we do like
you guys just nibble on each other's ears all weekend.
No, you bag tag or you hit somebody in the nuts. Like we used to do that when we were kids.
My dad did that to me when I got taller than him. Oh, it's my dad's birthday today when this is playing. Happy birthday, Papa. Happy 69th.
So I
got taller than him by the time I was 11, and that just really did not sit well with him.
That's tough times for being a parent.
It popped me in the nuts whenever I'd just like, you know, stand up straight to try and get me closer to his. Love you, Papa. Happy birthday again, Dad.
He was trying to stunt your growth.
Yeah, all right. Can we move on past this, please? We got other questions and
we've said enough. I'm sure we've said enough for
indictment,
irateness,
yeah. Indictment. Yeah. All right. So another question that came in was wondering what new projects are we working on these days, and that was from Rolling Off to Shane.
Yeah.
Go. It's all about you.
I'm asking you, do you have anything you're working on?
So I've got an indie thingy that we did locally in the Philadelphia area, coordinated at Comics and More.
Done with it?
What's that?
Are you done with it?
Yeah, it was just a 5-pager deal, and it's going to be coming out soon. JD actually even contributed to it. So he actually wrote and drew his part. And it's 5 deals and 1 devil, and everybody comes up with a concept of making a deal with the devil in 5 pages or less, and really great artist on it. It'll come out sometime in the next century. I don't know. It's taking a long time to go.
I'm collaborating with JD and Christian Dabari
on
a little project.
Are you? What is it?
Yes. It's going to be, hopefully, it's going to be for the, there's supposed to be a anniversary issue of Famous Monsters magazine that has a lot of comic book creators in it, and I was nice enough to be asked, and then I asked those two creative types to do that.
Oh, that's very nice.
Maybe we'll squeeze Bot Limp in there. We'll get the whole horror podcast in there. Speaking of which,
That'd be great if he does a comic for you.
We are.
I'd be fucking thrilled about that. Let me tell you.
We will be recording a new Cannibal Horror Cast in the next week.
No, I don't care. So you know what? Go ahead and talk about it. I'm going to put goats over this because I've got the edit.
I believe we're going to be covering Holidays, the movie Holidays. It's an anthology, mm-hmm. as well as just in time for the holidays, Black Christmas.
It's going to be different than goats this week. I'm going to put something even more horrible.
but lemmings or sheep or...
Oh, no, I can do worse than that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so that's
Oh, wait,
nice.
But then I'm also... I can't say when, but Pirouette will be coming out. I've got the okay, and Pirouette will be coming out later in the year. But I have two other projects I can't talk about, but I will do. I will soon. That's it.
All right, here's another question. It's from Joshua Marquette. Does every bit of pop media need a comic book about it? Well, I think our review of Madballs this week will definitively answer that question.
Yes. Yes.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It ruins it in many, many cases, as we'll see with our review of Madballs this week.
Oh. There will be Madballs fans that are overjoyed with... this comic.
God, what kind of life does that person lead? A Madball aficionado. Okay.
Mr. Madball, who designed the first Madball. And
you know, I kind of like how Joss Whedon does it. I mean, he's got a TV series, and when it shits the bed, he continues in comic books. I think that's cool. I've appreciated every one of the Serenity books that have come out. So that's one where it's kind of like a pop culture media thing where I go, yes, comic on.
Was there a Dollhouse comic?
Yes, there was.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it went that deep. I don't think it went too many seasons, but I believe there was a Dollhouse continuation, yeah.
I watched most of the Dollhouse.
Without pants on.
Even though it wasn't very good.
Without pants on.
I don't like that one Asian girl with a long face.
She hates you as well, she told me.
I don't know. There's just something about her that I don't like.
I think you're insane.
I think
you're insane.
Next question.
Okay, next question. Approximately how long do each of you groan when doing simple daily motions, such as standing up in sitting position or bending over to tie your shoes? That came from one of our own, Joseph D. Ivacone.
Yes, a.k.a. Humphrey Lee.
Asshat.
From our... He's not an asshat. He's a good man.
He's a wonderful man, but that's a shitty question.
Oh, it's true, though. Today, my lower back hurts... my knee is aching a little bit. I have a little bit of pain in my elbow. My foot arch is kind of swollen, and I haven't had a solid stool in a week.
That could just be the alcohol.
That's the Ultron. That's my Ultron complaint.
I'll be curt. My Ultron complaint is only when I have Crohn's flare-ups does my body go into a complete sack of ache. Yeah, I'm 42. I'm pretty happy. I'm almost 42. I've got no other problems except when this fucking Crohn's goes nuts and I don't have it medicated properly, and then just every joint in my body fucking aches.
I'll be 44 this year. I feel myself declining, so I'm getting back to the gym. Might have to. I'm going to use some of that male growth hormone that Sylvester Stallone does.
That's smart because he looks good. I think that's great. You should do that.
All right,
next question.
Next question.
Cons. Is there a way to make them about actual comics again? Absolutely not.
No. And if they did, they'd be boring.
And absolutely not. The comics are too inexorably tied with other media at this point. And they've got a supplement to pay the exorbitant cost of floor space that keeps getting more expensive each year, along with bullshit union fees, along with shitty taxes that the city's imposed to bleed the stone of money, that you're always going to have a fucking WWE wrestler next to your goddamn comics.
Can I say that I feel sexual harassment is bad?
Back four questions.
I just want to reiterate.
We're not pronounced. We haven't gone deep enough into this. You're going to go back four questions.
I just want people to understand that before they start typing.
No, they already started. I mean, they've submitted a whole paragraph by now.
Is a comic worth the cover price? Says Joshua Marquardt. Who's that?
Joshua. Well, he's one of our fans, actually.
No, he's not.
Adam Bunch asked a question about the cons. Joshua Marquardt. Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Which asshole?
He was, Joshua Marquardt was Squashua.
Oh, really? No shit, I never knew that. I've got so many people that follow me, I just have no idea who they are in real life.
Well, so. I head up ASCN Comics, so see, they...
Wow.
I have to know everybody's names.
That's great. So basically, he makes a very good point. I'm not going to read all this because it's really worth a lot. But he makes a very good point that there are some double stuff books that are going on, like Legends of Tomorrow and a couple others, clocking in at about $8 for a full store for a full four stories versus the $3.99, the $4.99 we're getting for sort of the anemic 18 to 21 page books that most of them seem to be. And I think it's parsable, brother. I mean, it's gonna be your tolerance level for how much you enjoy the stories. I mean, I'm really of the mindset. I think the biggest bang for the buck and the most enjoyment I get these days is the Earth One experience.
Well, I think his example was Providence, which I think is pretty much the most excellent comic out there right now. Not only does it tell, it's like a meta-textual kind of sort of story that has not only a comic part of it, but also at the end part of it, there's an essay where you can read, and you can read basically the main character's interpretation of everything that went on in that issue, which offers up yet another level of layer to the story that I just totally appreciate because I'm totally into this story. And he also talks about Legends of Tomorrow, which I've been liking, even though I don't like some of the stories in there. Like, the Metamorpho is kind of repetitive, is what I've read from Metamorpho, and I don't care about Metal Man.
You guys shit all. You did this while I was away on the cruise. I listened.
Yeah, did you read that?
I read it. You guys shit all over that issue number one.
He didn't like it.
You both
didn't
like it.
I liked a couple of them. Sugar and Spike was really good.
All right. Well, you didn't really. You kind of
Metamorpho was okay because I liked the character. I think that the mistake is that they got some of those. They got some old school writers on those that don't really know how to write modernly. In a modern way.
And we got to watch out, though, because we bitch constantly for the good old days when we got more word bubble for our buck. There's a fine line there.
Yeah, but they're retelling, like, we made the point of saying that, like, the end of the cliffhanger for the first issue in Firestorm was that Firestorm's going to explode, and that's, like, the end of every Firestorm comic.
Yeah. Well, you know, Man of the Atom. I you know what I found interesting is they didn't try to tie it at all really into the TV show of the same name.
I'm sure they will. I'll try to.
It's not even close right now.
I wonder if Hawkman will make an appearance.
Hawkman died on the show.
I heard that. That's stupid.
No, stop it. She's hooking up with the Atom now. It's really hot. Who once was Superman?
Yeah, it doesn't count.
What? Well, you know, I thought.
Can't wait till Qatar Hole comes back. He cuts a hole. Qatar's a hole in the Atom.
They call him Carter, and he'll have to be born as a baby and age again, although they time travel. So, yeah, you're right. He could just jump right. All right. Okay. He could be back.
See? Right there. Anyway, Legends of Tomorrow, I don't watch the show. I read the comic. It's okay. I get a retro vibe from it, so it's nice to get a retro vibe from it. Now, am I going to spend $8 every month on an issue? Probably not.
But they need four, to cut but that it's half. four stories in one.
Yeah, like each of them are. I mean, it's like four issues all together.
Right. So that's $2 an issue. That's cheaper.
The thing
than
is, though,
issue.
They haven't cut down on other issues that they come out with, and so it's like now it's just $8 more.
Well, that becomes a choice. That's a certain point of, and that's why Convergence was wonderful because you can pick your own universe.
Well, in your opinion.
Anyway. All right. You know what?
You forgot the question. Are you writing Bitch Planet? That question was posed to me.
That was a question.
I wrote just, back that you just, yes, you write what you know.
You write what you are. You write what you eat. Alright.
Is that all the questions?
I thank God, yes. I think we've got in more than enough.
No wonder JD cuts them up between 32 episodes.
You know, we've never gotten that many in 1 week.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
Because you know why? We don't often go from the web.
Ooh, shooting out Charlotte's bunghole.
Pew, pew. Thank you, gang. Let's review Madballs number one. Because you've all been waiting for that book.
And you know what? We told this earlier off the air.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be called if JD were writing it?
Madball.
Ha ha!
Like And that's really the most value I got out of the Madballs issue was that joke. We should say it's by Lion Forge Publishing.
Lion Forge, the people behind the Rampage Jackson comic.
Okay.
Oh, and also the Miami Vice comic book.
So, did somebody just drop the guillotine on your head? And I hope they did for picking this.
Well, the writer reached out to me, asked us to talk about it, and I figured, what the hell?
You know what?
We haven't covered books like this in a while. It's usually something of relevance to some type of 12-part series.
Mm-hmm.
So, figured we'd give this a shot.
And you know what? I give Brad McGinty, who reached out to you, credit for the editorial mandate that he was handed to resurrect the Madballs license that was purchased. I mean, why make more Madballs? Let's make a comic about them. So I applaud his effort and his characterization of... Shit, we're so old. I mean, there's people that don't know what Madballs are anymore.
So my question to you is, what? Did you have a Madball as a child? Or did you have all of them?
So I'm an only child. I had all of them.
You collected them all?
I had everyone.
So this is for you.
Yeah.
I had the eyeball one, and I believe my brother had the guy with the horn.
All right. So I was, I don't know, 11, 12 at the time, and Madballs fascinated me. And I believe Madballs, if there were Madballs today, and they were adult-oriented, like there was one that was just like, you know, a shot glass or one that had just syphilis all of its face from going to the strip club.
Well, it looks like one might.
What?
There are a couple that look pretty syphilitic.
Yeah, there's a lot of them there. I mean, really, though, like full on syphilis. Hepatitis Q, you know, the real incurable shit. Then I would say, yeah, you know what, Madballs, and I still find kind of their grotesqueness along with their base humor is still enjoyable, like Garbage Pail Kids. You know, I still get a chuckle out of them. There does not mean that I ever contrived or conceived of a actual story or narrative being placed around the objects of my affection.
The thing is, with any type of circular toy,
yep,
it's all about tossing it and then going to get it, and tossing it and going to get it, and then you just get sick of going to get it, and then you just leave it there in the yard, and then it gets chewed up by the dog, or shit on, or lost in like the tall grass in between the fence of the backyard.
Or you put them in a decorative display in your bedroom.
And then then when you're mowing the lawn, you hit the Madball, and then it shoots out the side, like, and you think you just hit a creature in there.
Or you put them in a decorative display in your bedroom.
Did you have a bunch of different decorative displays as a child?
I had all the Smurfs, too. I had all the Smurf characters.
Did you have the house?
Yeah.
Did you have a whole Smurf village? Did you play Gargamel?
Hello. And here's Azrael, my little Yorkshire Terrier, Woody, Sir Winchip of Fanwood, was my Azrael.
You weren't Big Mouth?
I'd fucking spray paint him orange.
Big Mouth!
I had all the Smurf figures as well. I had all the Transformers, too.
I had all the G.I. Joes and the Star Wars. Anything other than Star that? Wars. Oh, He-Mans. I had the He-Mans.
I didn't like He-Man. I had all a Mask. I loved Mask.
I got a couple of Mask.
Yeah.
You know what? We got Insectoids. A couple of those.
Yeah,
we also got some Crystal Warriors.
Never even encountered that one.
Molten Men.
So Madballs was about the Madballs in a sports arena, and then the Madballs, the backup story was the Madballs planet coming to Earth and unleashing the Madballs.
No, well, there were two backups. Yeah. There was that one, the one where the Madballs came to Earth and how they came here. They came here as a giant purple kind of blob, and then it separated.
Madball meteorite.
Madball meteorite, and then it separated. And then the last one was the Mad Balls met the trying to get to it. The civil balls. Civil spheres. They go through time. There's a time machine at the bottom of a toxic lake. And they end up fighting the orbs of civility.
You know what? DC would have less problem if there were more civil balls.
Civil balls, yes. See, this goes back to a sexual harassment thing, and I want to say once again that I do not condone sexual harassment.
You're not pro. We got it. You're not fucking pro. We understand. But there are those times when you just got to bite the ear off your coworker.
Why are the balls so mad? That's what I want to know. I want to know what is the heart of the frustration and anger that made them so damn angry.
Probably because they're swollen with angst from not
getting... Well, it's probably because so many kids ran them over with the lawnmower as kids.
Bastards.
Did you ever lose balls? Like baseballs?
What don't you understand about a decorative display?
They're footballs. What, you never threw the mad balls around? Did you even take them out of the package?
Yes, I took them out of the package and I put them
in. And then what'd you do?
I put them in a decorative... What the fuck? Am I speaking Chinese?
You didn't, go around display. The room or bounce them?
I was an only child. No.
Oh, you poor kid.
And if you bounce them, that's stupid because they're not perfectly centrifugal, so they bounce in an odd direction.
That was the weird thing about Mad Balls. Wow. They were not perfectly spherical, so bouncing them did not work as well. You could throw them like a baseball, though.
We used to whale tennis balls at each other because they hurt more.
Who, you and your imaginary friends?
You know what? I actually, because my parents had a cathedral. My parents had a room with a cathedral ceiling, so we had like a 40-foot ceiling in the house.
Ooh.
I would actually play wall ball in the living room.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Ball.
It actually was kind of cool, yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway. I'm just throwing back and forth with my brother.
Yeah, all right. Well, if my parents cared and fucked more, I would have thrown my mad balls around. Instead, they sat in a decorative display. Happy all birthday, right. Daddy!
That's the difference between you and myself. I played with my mad balls. You set them up in what did you put them in?
A decorative display.
All right, so, you know, mad balls.
It happens.
If you're the type of person who puts the balls in a decorative display, this might be the type of book for you.
It's not,
to read.
Because I had mine in a decorative display, and again, valiant effort, Brad, but, you know, I think this goes back to our Q&A earlier. Does every media need a comic? This was a reach.
Yeah, but this is a guy who, this is probably one of his first, mainstream books, and so, you know, good on you for getting getting a chance to write this and do this.
Good for you.
I hope it leads to bigger and better things, and I think... As far as the comic goes, its depiction of mad balls, they are spherical, and they do seem to be angry, so it's an accurate portrayal of the mad balls.
They're definitively mad balls. Hijinks and action. All right, let's next book. Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, number one.
What's it called? You just described what it's about.
It actually is not about that. The kids never actually walk into a bank.
Yet.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's happening, but it wasn't really about that. This is by Black Mask Studios, written by Matthew Rosenberg with art by Tyler Boss. And let me tell you, Tyler is boss indeed.
Yeah, he's good in this. Yeah, and this is, Matt Rosenberg is boss indeed as well.
Great story, great book. Matt did the other one we liked, right?
You can never go home.
You can never go home. So Matt's got a real zeitgeist antenna into the zeitgeist of a teenage mind, because this is four kids that essentially end up within the context of a bank heist, but you don't even really think about that because they're probably four of the most awesome and authentic kids you've read in comics in recent years.
Yeah, I like the kid that throws up. Which were you most like? Let me guess.
Go ahead, asshole. God,
you were the 7-foot kid, right? You were the 7-foot kid.
Yeah, I was. The last.
I'll bet you he has a Mad Balls decorative display at home as well.
Yeah, but you know what? All the women want him because he's fucking the alpha male because he's tall.
It's true.
So
he's not the alpha male in this. Daniel Berger. a.k.a. Mark L. Miller as a child.
Why do you think that little ginger was the alpha? He's just a foul-mouthed little...
He's the Guy Gardner of the group.
Hooligan. Yeah, but he's not the alpha male. He doesn't get the affection of the female wanting to mate most with him.
He doesn't. She doesn't like
That's
him.
That's the alpha
like
male.
You know Walter Johnson's going to get her as soon as he sprouts up, stops vomiting every time he talks to people.
So these are four kids, four kids, I guess in, like, Europe-y somewhere. This had a real, like, Dublin vibe to it, you don't think?
I think this is very much America.
God, where? In what time period? 80s?
No, I think this is probably an 80s. This is an Amblin sort of thing.
Okay.
Doesn't this feel like this could be the Goonies?
Yeah, but again, with just better dialogue and more authentic characters. So there's the tall kid, as we mentioned. There's the foul-mouthed little ginger hooligan.
Chunk.
And then there's the real shy kid, and then there's the tomboy girl, who's kind of coming into her own. And I don't know, he didn't rely on tropes for any of the archetypes. There was just an authenticity to every damn one of these kids in every cadence of their voice. And the patterning that they did with the art, I mean, there was, 15, 20 panels on some of these pages?
They're talking on CVs back and forth to each other.
And then the pedophile comes in and starts, like, fucking trying to hit on him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Before the internet, kids.
There are some fun little... What I like about this is some of the things that I like about Matt Rosenberg's stuff as a whole. And I have to say, Matt's a buddy of mine, and I wouldn't fawn over it so much, you know, if I didn't like it, even if he was a buddy of mine. But this is just... I mean, some of the things, like, he doesn't show the girl getting punched, but it shows like, reminder, under no circumstances is it okay to wander into someone's house uninvited and sucker punch a kid in the face. It's like stuff like that. It's like you don't see that in most comics. You see it in maybe Hawkeye, you know? And it's like some clever panel play in, like, Hawkeye, but that's, like, the only kind of places that you see that type of thing. It's mostly straightforward storytelling, and I just love all this stuff. It's just so good.
It's a use of the medium, and I think it's sort of like a bitch-slapping and unexpectedness of the omnipotent, you know, the narrator.
Yeah.
It comes in absolutely out of nowhere, and then the narrator's a smartass. And that's, you're right, that's fun. That's good stuff.
And it's not bad that, I love it that, like, in this book he says, Paige, tomorrow will be the first day she ever throws a punch. And then we actually get that scene tomorrow, where she does throw a punch, and we find out why she throws the punch, and it's, like, all this fun stuff. So that's just, like, really, really cool.
Yeah, I don't know Matthew Rosenberg from a fucking hole in the wall, and I'll just say he's a talent. I mean, he's a talent to be reckoned with. He's a guy I would absolutely, if I was Marvel, go to and say, write Runaways while Brian Vaughn is busy.
Yeah, I mean, he is... One of the things that kind of saddens me is that he is going to be a big star. He is going to be a force to be reckoned with in this stuff. And it's going to be sad that he's going to be so busy at these conventions that I won't be able to hang out with him and talk with him like I usually do.
Maybe it's about you again.
It is about me. I'm happy for his success, sad at the fact that I won't be able to hang out with him as much because Marvel and DC will be courting him and every other comic book people. And not only that, but fans will be, like, lined up and reading this book, or they should be.
And what will you be doing? Will you be weeping in a corner?
I will be providing him with Yoo-hoo chocolate because that's what he likes.
You want to be his Mickey?
Yeah, Yoo-hoo chocolate drink.
I'll be his caddy
and everything. That's what I'll do. Testicular
caddy.
One of my favorite parts of this book is when, well, other than the CV conversation that was fantastic, but one of my favorite parts of the part where Burger?
Yep.
He's waiting and he's so bored on the stakeout. That was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I love it when the shy kid throws up and it says Fanta. It's red. It looks like he's throwing up blood, but it's not. It's just Fanta. And the sound the vomit makes as it hits the floor, it says, is Fanta. And that's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I like the interstitials of, you know, they're playing some RPG in the beginning, and we get introduced to them through their RPG characters. And I love they've got all these kid activities, and then but there's a real dark overtone of this book, too, as well as the main plot is concerned, that, you know, there are these just four louts in town frequenting the house of the young girl and her father, where all the boys come over and hang out. We get to know them through the games and stuff they play. But, you know, and then at the end of it, the father seems to be part of the shenanigans of these four really not nice guys. They come in, they hit the girl.
Yeah.
There's some real kind of shock and awe moments to this. It's not all just, you know, banter between these kids.
Well, there's a real danger here. And that's why I mentioned, like, the Goonies, Explorers. It's got that age. It's like that age where only Spielberg could get away with this, putting kids in this type of danger, and having the danger that to be that level of real and like to the point where like these kids could die, like any. That's pretty awesome.
Spielberg and Six Flags.
Six Flags, yes.
Those are the ones that'll put the kids in danger. Did Spielberg do the Twilight Zone movie? Because that becomes extra dark, if you think about it that way.
He did the one with the Kick the Can episode. He did that one.
All right, it had nothing to do with the Vic Morrow helicopter thing where his head got chopped off and the kids got killed?
No, that was John Landis. You would know this if you would listen to the Cannibal Horror Cast, which we covered the Twilight Zone a couple of episodes back. You might want to Google that one or put it in the Google machine. Holy shit, it's raining in my house.
Is it raining or did four cows come in and start pissing on the microphone?
I'm just saying.
Just really, that's more what it sounds like.
Anyway, this is my favorite book of the week.
Wow.
That I read. Out of all of them,
wow!
I think it's just there's talk about bang for your buck. It's a 30 page book.
Yeah, lots of book for the price.
Lots of good stuff in here. The art is solid. Did you like the art?
I love the art. Yeah, I really did. I like the simplicity of it, and again the page. These days, I'm most enamored by panel work. I mean, if you know, that's what I love about like Rockefeller. Is that you know, just anybody who transforms a traditional cadence of panels without making it more cumbersome to read, which usually seems to be what happens when people fuck with traditional panel constructs.
Yeah,
I just applaud that effort. It reminds me of the first time I kind of jumped into Watchmen and said, "Holy shit, you can do that with separations."
I mean, the way this reads, it's inspiring to me. I do think that like Matt is he's a brand new voice in comics, and he's like he's a welcome new voice because it's like things get stale. People get used to telling the same old stories. At the same time, you can tell you mentioned Watchmen. You can tell that Matt's done his homework and he knows that you don't have to have splash pages the whole time. You don't have to have 5 panels in each page. You could actually do 12 panels in each page and make it work if you can be creative in it.
It requires very clever writing and a patient artist. I mean, I like Tyler Boss. I think he's very good, but he's also not very detailed. So if I look at a hyper detailed artist, it would take him 7 months to do the fucking book.
Definitely, yeah.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm also saying that at a certain point you got to kind of admire the gumption of a regular schedule and making those right sacrifices, within the constraints of your deadline to keep people interested in the story and what's going on to sacrifice the hyper detail.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that there is a credit to the wallpaper maker in this. Did you notice that?
No, but they deserve it because it's awesome.
They made that like elephant style wallpaper stuff and everything, and there's like elephants and animals and everything on the wallpaper, and Rosenberg credits The maker of that. That is wallpaper designer Courtney Menard.
Well, good job, Courtney, because that adds a nice accoutrement to the main course of four kids walk into a bank.
And that's what I like about it. It's this extra, all these little extras that come in this book. He provided that to a point, and we can never go home. There was a Black Canary issue that Rosenberg did. It was a fill-in issue that he did for DC that had some interesting little, just little things tossed in there just for, you know, he didn't have to do it, but he did it because he wanted to make the story interesting to read. And so that's what good comic booking is.
I wonder what he would do if he was ever given the chance to write Wonder Woman Earth 1, number 1. But since he wasn't, we'll just have to review the one that was put out by Grant Morrison and Yannick Paquette this past week.
Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison from Blue Balls, Kentucky.
No, he's from
England. Oh, Scotland.
He's from York and Birken Schmerkenshire.
That's Sweden. That's not even the right country.
He's from like England or something.
Birken Schmerkenshire is in the Swedes.
Yeah.
Okay. But who's not in the Swedes is Wonder Woman Earth 1. She's on Thermiscaria.
Yes, exactly.
That island.
She's in the Mascara.
Earth 1. There was a lot of bondage in this.
There was.
Yeah.
This is a bondage-heavy issue, but apparently...
Very bondage.
I have never gone back and read those original Wonder Woman episodes, but...
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they were bondage heavy.
Oh.
Like with Wonder Woman constantly bound in chains and her fighting back by binding up her characters in it as well.
Okay, you shoving your mouth full of something too while we talk about this?
Yeah.
Good, good. Nobody could tell.
I thought I was being subtle.
No, you're gaping maw and you're getting like you have like half a stroke and you can't get your words out completely. No, we all know.
So,
yeah,
this was a long read.
That's descriptive. It's an Earth 1. Of course it's a long read because it's like five comics in one.
Took me a while to get through.
They all do.
I don't know. I guess I should get used to this because Wonder Woman is really... like going to be thrust in our faces here for the next couple of years now with the new movie coming out. I don't want to read her origin over and over and over again. Like I hear like Superman's origin, Batman's origin.
That is an Earth 1 staple though. I mean, come on, they got to set the tempo. I think what I found so amazing with this one is that by the fact that it spends so much time on Themyscira, that you don't get a flavor for what Earth 1 really is, like you got with Batman, Superman, and Titans. They really did a good job of showing you the difference of this Earth because they spent a lot of time in our world, where Wonder Woman really only makes a quick jaunt over to our world to pick up some Sarastatutes after she drops off Steve Trevor at the hospital.
Isn't okay. Other than one pretty blatant change to the mythology, how is this different than the Wonder Woman that we have in Earth? I don't know, what is this that we're in?
We're not in a particular Earth because we live in a convergence world where we're omnipotent over the all 52 universes. Tell everybody what the big changes.
Steve Trevor. In this universe, Chris Pine is a black man.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering. But other than that superficial change, is this a story that could have occurred in our universe?
Well, all right. Our universe is a New 52 universe. No, because this was... you know, they changed that whole nature of the gods around in the New 52 universe. It's not as clean and tidy
and as pure to the Greek mythology that
it wasn't as well thought out as this one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying Brian Azzarello's wasn't well thought out.
I think it's more thought out. It's more convoluted and complex than do I think what he did than when I read this.
Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, it really didn't feel like that Azzarello was, like, working with everyone else.
No, he worked completely separate. So that's why I ask what you mean by this universe. Because, you know.
I just think, I think this, there's no reason this needs to be an Earth One book. This could be just the new Wonder Woman comic starting 5 years ago and taking us through the 5 years to today. And then we could have an awesome kind of like Grant Morrison-esque series out of this whole thing.
I've
in continuity.
It's my least favorite of all the Earth Ones, and I've loved the Earth Ones in concept and execution since they've come out. I think they're wonderful, and I think that's where I get a full experience of comic book.
Why is this your least?
Because essentially, the Wonder Woman mythos is not that different than what we've seen before. And it just felt like a dial-in of what they could have done to make this completely different and sort of reset my expectations. I would have had more respect for this, I think, if it actually started off in the 1970s and we got pantsuit Wonder Woman back.
You know what I would have liked to have seen?
That just, to me, seems more clever than what we saw of her discovering the world of man for the first time and realizing that the world of man smells nice.
Ooh, you know what, though? Yeah. What? I think I would have liked to have seen Wonder Woman Public Enemy number one. Let her be the bad guy getting to know this world and kind of doing what a lot of feminist groups say they want to do, and then show I think that would have been a ballsy move.
Just saying that, yes, we can do anything, and here I am doing it.
It would have been a ballsy move doing that, but then also like saying, like, if the shoe was on the other foot and showing, like, okay, what if the Amazons came here and took over the entire world and showed that, like, it doesn't matter who's in power, there's going to be corruption and there's going to be good and bad people in the way. I think that would be a much more altruistic kind of story that would open eyes, and it would let people know that, like, not all women are not. I mean, you know, not all men are bad and evil, and you know, stuff like that.
I agree with you. It's really just something we've got to suck up at this point in time.
Is that all men are evil?
Pretty much, because we were evil for so long, we have to pay reparations for what our forefathers did.
And I would like to take this time to say that sexual harassment is bad.
It's bad. You don't condone it. We're all in agreement. It's not good.
But wouldn't that be an awesome story that in the end, in this, maybe it doesn't happen in this arc. Maybe it's like it's the go girl, power girl thing where Gadget girl thing where it's like at the end she really does come through with like a fistful of steel and takes over the government and does all this stuff, and the Amazons are like, they collar all the men and all this other stuff and all that stuff.
One of the mantras of Earth One, though, is that it's close to our world. It's trying to mirror and reflect and stay as true to our world as possible despite these fantastic elements coming in.
Alright.
Completely defying the nature of the whole purpose of the book.
Book to be in Elseworlds, then.
There we go. So wrote a Wonder
All I'm book. Saying is Wonder Woman Public Enemy number one would be a ballsy move.
It would be. You're right. Here's what concerns me is we've been trying to rewrite this book since we first started talking about it.
I guess that's a statement as to like how kind of bland this issue was, huh?
Very bland and not as impactful as any of the other Earth Ones. I found a lot of time I was kind of bored as they traipsed along the island of dipshits. You know what? I'd be real fucking happy all day, too, if there was a purple light that kept me alive forever, and whenever I got stressed, I could go off and fuck.
Yeah, that's basically what she does.
That's the whole... Yeah, no, they implicitly stated it. They get to stay young forever because of the purple light ray. And whenever they're really kind of bummed out and they're just having a bad time...
They have a festivus.
They go out and fuck.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. I think they should have put in a scissoring scene.
Oh, absolutely.
Really missed opportunity for a scissoring scene.
Really not enough Sophos unless you got the scissor.
But a scissor, a consensual scissoring scene where both parties were okay with the scissoring.
Right. The scissoring was warranted by both parties.
By both parties.
Essentially agreed to scissor along the river Thermascarius.
The mascara.
Okay, yeah. The river.
Yeah.
Scissoring along.
Yannick Paquette drew some good stuff and some bad stuff. Or, you know, not too many bad stuff, but he drew some bland stuff and some exceptional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like the designs of the little helicarriers there, or that little hover board things that they're riding.
Yeah, and the invisible jet update was well done as well.
Yeah, but I mean that's still kind of just a stupid concept anyway.
I hope
they don't have a visible jet in the freaking movie universe.
No, they have to, or they have to make some kind of ironic reference to it, I'm sure.
Is it invisible? Yes, it's totally cloaked.
We have to go on my jet. Oh, I don't see it. It's invisible. And then he's just looking the wrong direction. She laughs and she kind of flicks her hair. And then they play the. And as they run to the actual jet that's not invisible.
Yeah. They run to the jet, but then they run into the invisible one.
And,
accidentally.
Chris Pine's head falls off like Vic Morrow's from Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Again, we're going on a real tangent rather than praising this, so I think that says spades about our feelings of Wonder Woman Earth 1.
Yannick draws some pretty ladies.
Good stuff.
He also draws, he's really good. I mean, he's got some really cool designs that you see, like, in this thing. I kind of want to see him do, like, a Luke Cage, because he does draw this black dude really well. This black dude, by this black dude, I mean Steve Trevor. Yes.
Steve Trevor, no. And, yes, he does go all people well, really.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, all, yes. There's a big girl in this story.
Fat Amy from Pitch Perfect is now in Wonder Woman, teaching her about lady loving in the world of men.
She's the fat friend.
Let that one sink in, folks.
Yeah, she's the fat friend that is in pretty much every rom-com you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? What's her real name? Rhoda Barrett? No. What's her name?
Rhoda Morgenstern.
Rebel Wilson.
Rhoda, Fat Amy.
That's her name, Rebel Wilson.
It is, you're right. Rhoda Morgenstern.
Or Rhoda Morgenstern. But she is the less attractive, heavier... one who tells it like it is.
Sassy.
She occasionally says things like, you go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do they say in these movies?
I like Australian penis in my wangy do.
She also says, like, she's as dirty. If.
She's really dirty. She's really dirty girl.
Yeah, she's a dirty girl.
And this girl's a dirty girl as well. And I don't know, there's a bond that forms between her and Wonder Woman. I don't have any fucking clue why.
Do you think that they save them from a bus falls?
No, I know why Fat Amy wants to be friends with Wonder Woman. Can't get Wonder Woman's... real, I can get a beat.
Well, Wonder Woman needs a real world source. If mm-hmm. she figures if anyone can tell it like it is,
mm-hmm.
then it's Fat Amy, who designed her outfit, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
in the book.
I would think I'd pick a glory hole with pube hairs glued to the top of it, so it looked like it had a female wig on as my female role model before I'd pick this chick.
She is a little annoying. I could tell she is the cat. What's her name? Kat Dennings.
Kat Dennings, the one who ruined Thor.
Yeah, she's the Kat Dennings. So just look for this in the new Wonder Woman movie. She's the Kat Dennings character, and just think of Kat Dennings and how annoying she was in the last two Thor movies, and that's what this other lady is.
Sassy and fun. It was really only the last one where I really just hoped that she would just, Loki would just lance her.
She should eat some Uru.
It's fucking awful.
Uru sandwich.
And yeah, shame on the script for making her that integral of a part of it. Then somebody need to get their balls put tied to a car battery.
Yeah, I don't like her. I don't like her. I think she's an annoying person.
Right.
She may not be an annoying person, but the character she plays is very annoying in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I really have just nothing to say about this. It's a book that came out on Earth 1.
But they said people were up in arms about with all the bondage stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, are really people that uptight?
Yes, they are.
About the whole thing where she asks him to wear the bondage?
That's not why they're uptight, Buck. It's all the times that she's put in chains.
Well, she's put in chains by other women.
You know what, Bug? That's not the point. Because if men did not invent chains to begin with, those women could not have put her in those chains.
Well, that's true.
Right, so...
God, I hate men.
You should just go off and shame your penis after this podcast is over.
I hate men.
Say nasty things to your penis for its existence on your body, okay?
I hate men and I hate myself.
Good for you. But what'd you think of Joyride number one from Boom Studios?
Oh, wait, are you talking about a sci-fi book? Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare yourself. Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
Are you talking about a brand new sci-fi book with a spicy lead character?
Yeah.
You're talking about that?
Yes, I'm talking about that book. That book where we have forgotten about the stars.
Wait, what stars?
Exactly.
Were they made by men?
I believe they were. They were at least named by men. So we should hate them. All right. Let's get off that. All right, so Joyride number one from Boom Studios. This was cute. Again, it had a nice concept of we've become so techno-savvied that we are totally hear you typing. Like a goddamn...
Not typing.
You're unraveling.
Quietly something. Getting out another...
You're not. It's not quiet. You're... Fucking Joyride number one.
Proceed.
You so don't care about sci-fi. You've just completely ostracized the sci-fi portion. And you know what? We forgot about the stars. These two kids get to go up to the stars because they think they contact an alien. The alien turns out to be a dickhead, and they hijack his ship, and they leave for space. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm. Boy, why did we put egg around the Earth anyway?
Because aliens are assholes, and as soon as we discovered aliens were assholes, we became xenophobic isolationists.
See, I thought it was the aliens that put the thing around it.
I didn't get that vibe, no.
That's the vibe I got from this one.
You might be right.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, you might be, considering your cavalier attitude towards sci-fi.
Well, let's see. But I don't really feel... I don't really care enough to go back and fact-check that one.
No,
I don't know.
No, I get it.
It's not that I don't like this book, but again, it's... I've read this type of book, like, 100 times already in the past 2 years.
It didn't wow out on me. I mean, I think Lansing and Colin Kelly, the writers... have an interesting concept, but yeah, it's not differentiated enough. I didn't feel that much of a sense of wonder enough to say I've got to go, you know, balls deep into this and keep collecting it. It was cute.
Although this is Boom, a book like this is the reason why those two people were fired from my Image. This is the death knell for the Boom's marketing department, I guess. I don't know.
It's amazing. It's everything's collapsing around us. It's apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a ton more to say about this. It was a decent sci-fi read.
Conversationally?
Yes.
The relationship between the two characters in this book was really well done. I will give this book credit for that.
The lead protagonist, female, the sassy one that Bug mentions. And
the weaker male that chooses to hang with her.
And her guy, Friday, who helps her out of things and helps her along. All good. All for it. It's cool.
Sure.
They're on the moon. It's in the future. Whatevs. Their dialogue was very kind of genuine and authentic, especially as they discuss some fashion artifacts that carried over, despite the fact that the world isn't an egg in a bubble and there's no sun or stars anymore. They talk about a pair of sunglasses and how you wear a pair of sunglasses, not really to block out the UV rays or to help you with glare, but just look cool.
Look cool, yeah.
Yeah. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, too many questions though as to why Earth did this, and I just did not get that vibe. Despite the fact that they do meet up with an alien, the alien's an asshole.
He immediately wants to enslave them.
Right, which is probably what's going to happen, let's be perfectly honest. Because if there's any aliens that show up, they came to us, which shows that they're technologically superior. And really, what does any species do to something else that they view as an ant? They try to control it or destroy it.
Also, most likely, that alien was a male.
Probably. Because he was a total dick.
He was an asshole.
So, good job with Joyride. Sci-fi fun? Don't know.
Probably. That has to be our shortest review of the week here.
Yeah, probably not going to come back. But you know why? Because we've got three more fucking books to go through.
Do we really?
Yeah, we do.
Like what?
We've got Depth Number 1 by Matt Kint, and writing and artist work, and then Charlene Kint as letterer. I love this book. I thought this was great.
I thought it was deep.
Oh, God. This was like The Abyss with a good script.
Oh, I like The Abyss.
Why?
But it is like The Abyss. The Abyss had a good script. It had Ed Harris. He's good. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Those are people. That's not a script.
Yeah, but they delivered the script well. All
right. It had good special effects because James Cameron is a baller at special effects. And I love the concept of, you know, in the depths of the ocean and people kind of having to breathe liquid to sort of compensate for the density of it all. It's just, it's very visceral. It's very spooky. And Kint does a great job of just describing, just how ominous the ocean can be.
I actually did an interview with Mr. Kint a little while ago, and he said that some of the stuff he made up, but others, like, for the most part, this is all technology that is being developed.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to be. I mean, ever since, you know, I went to Disney World in the 80s as a kid, and you go to the future world, it's like one choice, learn how people live in space. Choice number two, see how the animatronics of how people live on the land. Number three, see how we live in the oceans. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unexplored real estate. We need to exploit it soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this is a murder mystery in the depths of the ocean. So it's obviously the future. We've got the ability to sort of have subterranean lives and cultures under the sea. And this one woman, her father ends up murdered.
Oh, no.
In this deep sea station. Not deep sea vehicle. That's DSV with Roy Scheider.
Well, I want to correct you that this is called Department H, but it's spelled DEPT.H, so it's like depth. It's got a double meaning.
Wow, good for you. Yeah, I didn't even really catch on to that.
Just letting you know.
Thanks. I'm gonna call it depth.
But anyway, this is a really cool story. It is a very well structured mystery. Whereas he has shown us all of the suspects, they've given us the murder, they've given us the scene, mm-hmm. they've given us the location. It's a locked room mystery.
Yeah.
And so basically all the clues, if this were a really good locked room mystery,
All the clues are already there. We should be able to solve this right now.
I didn't look that deeply, and I think we need to give notice to the fact that Mr. Kent is very much an artist of the Lemire vein.
Yes.
Very sketchy, loose, not very detailed, very authentic, very genuine. I loved it, but not big on details. So I'll agree with you. We could probably look at those panels and try and suss it out, but it'd be hard to do.
I'm just saying, this seems like it's one of those books where it seems like he's done his... Kent is a very intelligent writer, probably one of the most intelligent writers that is out there right now, in like a lot of the stuff that he's done. Because, I mean, wait, he's doing another book we're looking at tonight as well.
He did. He also did Divinity 2 by Valiant.
Yes. And it's like he's just a very smart... he reminds me a little bit like Hickman, although he pays a little bit more attention to personality and the human condition than Hickman. More like a Greg Rucka. This reminded me of a really good Greg Rucka book.
Yeah, it is. It's just very humanistic. There's love. There's betrayal. She's got to go down and investigate. The lead character has to go down and investigate the murder of her father. At the behest of the billionaire who's sort of funding this undersea life raft, if you will, as the rest of the Earth falls to shit. And it's very personal because, you know, her father ran this program. She's known these people her whole life. Her brother is a suspect.
Uh-huh.
Her old scissoring partner from junior high is a suspect.
Yep.
Used to scissor sometimes as I read about the tales of Thermoscaria, riverbank scissoring.
Sometimes they would protractor as well.
You never know. It got nutty in Sister Mary Margaret's school for reform girls.
Yeah.
So, you know, Department H is very cool, and so is depth.
I agree.
Happy with this.
This is a very... At times, though, there is a lot of... I think... And this might be intentional, but things are very murky and muddy. It looks like he's watercoloring this.
It's underwater.
Yeah, but it looks like this is watercolor.
Very good.
Or a watercolor kind of filter for paint shop painter or whatever.
It has a watercolor vibe, I'm telling you. I agree. You know what doesn't have a watercolor vibe?
What?
But has Matt Kent written all over it.
What?
Divinity 2 by Valiant.
Didn't we just say that?
Yeah, we did, but we didn't segue and actually talk about the fucking book, so I'm trying again.
All right, what's Divinity 2 about?
It's a takeoff from Divinity 1, which came out a while ago, which is sort of their version of... I call it like the Valiant version of Captain Atom. Sort of this character struck by a cosmic accident that can then kind of fucking do anything.
You mean Captain Manhattan?
Manhattan. I always saw Captain Atom, though, as kind of being able to do that, too. He kind of had that... Yeah. It's nuclear-fused, I get it, but...
It's Dr. Manhattan, by the way.
I know.
Sorry, I was the one... I'm correcting myself.
Yeah. So anyway, Divinity 2 talks about, you know, we met the one cosmonaut in the first book who kind of came back to Earth.
He goes to Divinity and Beyond.
So the first divinity, spaceman comes up, he comes back down, he's pretty much omnipotent. Did some minor wrecking of the havoc of the Valiant universe, but nothing too major. I did not follow it all the way through. I'm so far behind. That's how far behind I am on some of my books.
Here's my problem with this book.
Yeah.
In the recap, that pretty much tells me everything that happened in the first issue of Divinity. First, maybe one or two issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm just wondering, like, what else happened in that series other than just that happened in the recap? Because it doesn't really say where the other Divinity guy is.
Ended up, yeah. I noticed that, too. I
knew all this story that they recapped me on, and I have not finished the Divinity series.
Yeah, I think we read the first two issues for the podcast, essentially.
Yeah.
That makes me sad, because I really liked where the book was going. I thought it was pretty cool. And, you know, Valiant has rarely done me wrong.
Why is that?
Because they're awesome. Their continuity is tight. They care clearly about trying to create a cohesive, universal narrative versus a piecemealed approach. Their way around the renumbering thing was to go volume early and quickly. Questionable, but I don't really fault it at this point. I think it's a smart move. Not 100% what I want, but we've proven time and again we're different breeds of readers.
I think it's a mistake to kind of like retitle a lot of these books, like A&A, The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong. Mm-hmm. I think they should have just said Archer and Armstrong Volume 2 or whatever, or some. I don't like that they're doing the whole like Incredible Hulk, the dynamic Hulk, the all new, all different Hulk. You know what I mean? It's like, in the end, it doesn't feel like an epic story. It just feels like licensed characters being told by different
creators. And it gets dangerous because JD mentioned that he missed a couple of Harbinger stories and he loved Harbinger, but he missed a couple stories because of that renaming. So.
Yeah, and now it's kind of hard to catch up because you don't know the order in which things have been released.
Well, I mean, it's not rocket science.
It's not, but I mean, if you're titling your title differently every 6 months or so, it's going to get confusing in the long run if you've got a long-term kind of like perspective on it.
I'm actually like, okay with them titling different because it makes my database cleaner that way if they all have a different title. My problem is when they don't. So I got to start playing the Volume 2, Volume 3, Volume whatever game. That gets messy.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. You know what else got messy?
What, are we skipping this one already?
No, I mean, what else do you want to say about it?
I'm saying the art is amazing.
It is. Trevor Harris.
We didn't even talk about the story. The story is about the other two cosmonauts who were lost with Divinity number one.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out what happened to the two of those guys.
Yeah, it was pretty baller because the one that ends up sort of living is the female cosmonaut, and she ends up using the one guy as her
battery
so she can get off the planet and survive. So that
I was thinking it would be cool if that guy survived as well, and he was just fused to that ball, and he's like resentful and pissed off because he's like a mad ball now.
Just brought us full circle. Full circle.
That would be cool if he was like a mad ball.
That's almost kind of like a Kitty Pryde vibe when she was strapped to the bullet that was sort of shot across the universe. Remember that?
Yeah, did she ever make it back?
She did.
Oh, yeah, she's with Star-Lord now.
Yeah, she got into the depths of space for enough that she could kind of phase out and get the hell off that ride. I love this, and I loved where the book ended up, that, you know, she comes back to Earth, and essentially she's a puppet of Putin.
She just walks right in and says, "Hi, Putin. How's it going?"
Yeah, because
What's tootin', Putin?
He is a scary motherfucker, boy.
He's a frightening individual.
Be afraid, folks.
I don't want to say anything negative about Putin.
You're afraid of personal retribution.
I'm afraid he's listening to this podcast.
I would not worry about that.
Do you think... Hey, they have iTunes in Russia.
They do. I still wouldn't worry about it.
If I ever met Putin in person, I don't know what I would... What would you say to him?
Not that. Wouldn't call him that.
Rootin' Tootin' Putin?
Uh-huh. I would ask him, did you ever try to rub the thing off of Gorbachev's head?
I would say, don't ever watch Red Dawn.
The remake, you mean?
The first one was just for different reasons, but the original Red Dawn, I don't want him to look at that.
I would say I am not on the side of Patrick Swayze. I'm glad he's dead.
I'm crazy for Swayze. Don't you dare say that.
No, I would say I'm glad Swayze's dead, because long live Mother Russia.
Oh, God. This is scary. This is getting scary conversation. Let's move on.
I am Ukrainian, you know.
Oh.
Watch your ass. Yeah, this is a great book. Trevor Harrison. I've loved his art forever, so.
It is amazing colors by David Barron, amazing inks by Ryan Wynn, on top of everything Trevor Harrison does, which is amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing on amazing on amazing on amazing.
It's like a triple-decker amazing sandwich.
Well done, Valiant, that you get our triple-decker amazing sandwich of the week award.
Yes. Yes.
You know what else was pretty triple-decker amazing? And that was Walking Dead, the Alien Number Zero. And it's amazing because it's our last book, thank God.
It only took us, like, what? Is this a two-hour-long podcast?
Yeah, we just crested it.
I don't know. I lost track because I took a nap there in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm surprised you didn't go into... Yeah, you went into sugar shock from whatever the fuck you were shoving in your mouth. So The Walking Dead Alien Number Zero is very odd because it's written by Brian K. Vaughan.
What?
I'm just saying. And you know what else is weird?
Huh?
It takes place in Europe.
What?
And it's called The Alien Number Zero.
The Alien in The Walking Dead? Now that's a crazy title.
Huh? Why would they do that?
I don't know. This is kind of weird. Did they release this online? I don't know.
I believe so.
Did I miss this at my comic book store?
I did not see it. I believe this is an online only because this is like the private eye where you get to contribute the number of shekels you want to pay for Mr. Vaughan's work.
How come that doesn't work for me when I ask for that stuff?
Because you're not Brian K. Vaughan.
Well, only one person is.
He had to become Brian K. Vaughan before he could work off of the communist breadline form of comic distribution.
Yeah, I'm back on the chain gang still.
And good for him. I mean, it is pretty awesome. I'll tell you something. Yes. I bought the Private Eye issues, and I paid regular comic book price for them. Just because I thought they were that good. I thought they were worth it. So, I mean, I was happy to kick in my $3.99 for them.
I haven't read it yet.
The Private Eye, it's really good. It's really good.
Is Marcus Martin part of the Private Eye as well?
No.
Who's that? What does he do? He did Spider-Man for a while, didn't he?
He did art for this book, but I don't know what else.
I think he did Daredevil. Is that Chris Samney? I thought Marcus Martin was in there as well. I could be wrong.
You look up something. I'm tired of looking everything up.
No. Anyway, this book, sort of 28 Days Later-y, a little bit, but so is the other one.
What's 28 Days Later? I've never heard of it.
Well, it's a horror thing, and it's obvious you wouldn't know it because you're not on the horror, the Cannibal Horror Cast, we're going to be recording our new episode here in a couple of days.
And I don't care. What's horror? It's like Scooby Doo trying
that
to.
Was, do you know that podcast. Episode of Star Trek where they go into the mirror world and Spock had a goatee?
Yeah, yeah.
Horror was Uhura's evil. Opposite.
I'm so sure that's not how they pronounced it.
Aurora.
Aurora. That's
anyway. Like... This story was about a guy who is a pretty inept survivor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman there to save him.
In the early days of the apocalypse, the apocalypse has just happened. Really, the zombie apocalypse has just kicked in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just saying, but there's much like 28 Days Later, there's a more battle-hardened female there to kind of save him. And they go to try to take a boat across the ocean to go to America.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one guy has a brother in America.
And his brother goes by the name of...
Richard.
Some people call him
Rick.
Correct. I thought this was going to be about Shane's brother. That's really what I wanted to say.
I thought this was going to be, I don't know. That seems weird. Shane's brother. Did Shane have a brother?
No, but I just like to hear some guy describe, yeah, my brother really likes to fuck other guys' wives, especially when they're in the hospital. And I miss him so much. I love him. Can you help me get back?
No, it was, I mean, that was a twist that I don't think I really needed. It was a little bit convenient.
I'm kidding.
Still, at the same time, it was kind of cool.
It added something to the story. It really did. It said something about, you know, it gave each of those characters another level of depth and dramatic tension between the group. So I was fine with it. I'm just being a dick.
Yeah, but I don't know. The girl, though, I mean, what did it add for her? Nothing really.
Lori, that she thought her husband was dead and that she needed some kind of comfort in the face of impending doom.
No, I'm not talking about Shane. I'm talking about the girl, the lady.
In this book.
In this book, who in the armor.
Sorry.
And so she, like, what? What is she? I mean, is she going to show up? They got to find her?
Maybe. Maybe she shows up. Maybe she shows up later in the book. I don't know why she got so dirty and flirty. Like, that felt like a little too much. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a little much.
Yeah.
She takes off her clothes and she's prancing around in her under things.
Which, again, whatevs. It's the apocalypse. It's dirty. It's sticky. You know, I'm forgiving of that. But, again, she's really heavy on the sexual innuendo, which I don't know.
The thing is, he didn't say no, so he could not get her for sexual harassment.
Correct. He was asking for it.
He was kind of asking for it. He was not asking for it, but he wasn't denying it either. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to go with he was asking for it.
I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say those words.
Well, you can if you're talking about a dude.
Well, I know. I'm not even going to say that for a dude.
All right. I will. I'll take that. I'll take that.
Anyway, this was a really good story. It didn't feel needed. But it was fun, nevertheless.
It was. Very interesting art choices, too. I mean, you know, Marcos Martin did a great job, pure black and whites, except when Jeff, Rick's brother, ends up getting cut up a little bit. Then that is the only splash of red a la Sin City. I thought that was an interesting choice, and it's almost not till the end of the book.
Yeah, that's odd that they did that, since Walking Dead does not use red.
Right.
Although this doesn't use the gray tones as much as the other Walking Dead does.
No, not at all. Yeah.
This is simply black and white.
Very, very stark. Very stark contrast, yeah. But good. Very, very good.
It's a good book, yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they put this out. Is it going to be in a trade? Is there going to be other? Will there be other stories?
I imagine they'll do it like they did The Private Eye, sort of like an oblong, widescreen, more of an ebook kind of format to it.
But I mean, I wonder who else they're going to get to kind of contribute to this. Is this going to be just Brian K. Vaughan doing a story like this?
They got a whole series that takes place now before the apocalypse. So.
What?
Or before Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, but. Do you watch that?
No, I got bored.
I got bored, but they say it gets better. I watched the first four episodes of the first season. I figure I might as well watch the rest of it.
I got bored. I just couldn't. And now this season's on a boat.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tell us if we're wrong about The Walking Dead.
If you want to write into the Cannibal Horror Cast and talk about it.
Jesus Christ, no. Don't fucking write to the Cannibal... Fuck the Cannibal Horror... Fuck cast, okay? Write to this one at info@poptardsgo.com. You can interact with me, Rob Patey. Just put Rob Patey into Google. You'll find me. I'm the only one. Bug, where can they find you to talk to you?
I work at a bar here in Chicago. Go in there and talk to me. I'm always happy to flap some gums to folks while I'm pouring them shots. But also,
there we go.
You can see me on Ain't It Cool News. And I also have a new website.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
What is that website?
It's called mlmillerwrites.com, all one word. .com.
Because Miller World was taken.
Because ML Miller World was taken. But ML Miller writes, and that's where you can find all of my reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And also a couple of little behind-the-scenes stories of some of the projects that I've worked on through the years as far as, like, comic books and things like that. I'm just going to keep on just writing. I usually post something once a day, if not numerous times through the day. And they're either going to be old reviews,
mm-hmm.
And I want to try to get
a catalog of all of them eventually, but I've probably reviewed multiple thousands of movies, so it's going to take a while for me to do that. But I'm going to be adding them periodically through the years. I just wrote up a little piece about how I came up with the characters for Jungle Book.
Oh, well, that's nice. That is like kind of like a bonus vignette.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's value-added content. That's nice.
Yeah, so I wrote that. I put that up just the other day. You can, if you're interested in hearing a little bit more about the Jungle Book. And I want to hear about your thoughts on the Jungle Book movie. Did you like it? Did you like my book better? What didn't you like about it?
I didn't read either.
Damn it. Did you see the Jungle Book?
Yours or the movie?
The movie.
Yes, but not yours.
You saw that Jungle Book? What did you think of it?
No, I didn't see it. I didn't give a shit.
Well, I felt like they crammed the story, the songs into the story a little bit.
If you asked me to do anything other than write the Baloo story for Jungle Book, I probably would have taken a pass.
I wrote a good Baloo story.
I love Baloo, and I liked the idea I had for Baloo. I liked that you let me do that. So that was like a perfect storm of why I wanted to write that story with you.
And that story led directly into the rest of the series.
Booyah.
See, so that's you got to collaborate, folks. That's the story. You got to work with people.
It takes two to make a thing go right.
You're right. Now, you have to make sure it's a mutual collaboration and ask for permission. Otherwise, it could be called harassment.
If I said no to the collaboration and it was forced upon me, right.
That would be called harassment.
Okay, should we get the fuck out of here before we indict ourselves more?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
All right. Nighty night, kids. Thanks for listening once again. And sorry, no JD. He'll be back.
Thanks for putting up with us.
Yeah. Loves you. Toodles. Toodle.
Yeah. There it was. 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yep.